This is a lecture by L. Ron Hubbard, given on the 30th of December, 1956. The title of this lecture is Solution to Psychosis. This lecture is 69 minutes long. Reproduced by Golden Era Productions.
Hi today. Well, I'm very glad to see you all survived the dianazine you didn't take last night. It's a very remarkable thing, you know. I suppose if I were convincing enough about dianazine, you wouldn't ever have to take any of it. I think that's the way most drugs work, as a matter of fact. Seems to me that back in a book called Scientology 8-8008, it takes this up. Also, the 64 Hours Lecture Philadelphia 52 also takes this up, about the highest level of aberration is conviction. That is, as a matter of fact, the highest postulate is convinced, really convinced. Well, it so happens that dianazine's a convincer. If you've got a preclear that's never had a somatic, give him some. Give him some. He'll be convinced. Anyway, we have the vast difficulties of too many convictions. For instance, the only reason electronics work, probably, is that everybody is convinced. And when they don't work, it's because everybody's convinced. One of these days, General Electric and Westinghouse and Ma Bell and so forth will decide that they are no longer convinced. At which moment, no electronics, see? No, factually, this has something to do with it. When you get things down solid, you know, solid, that's very convincing. That's very, very, very convincing. Solidity is a convincer to end all convincers. Why? Because it's a conviction gone solid. That's easy, isn't it? And all you have to do is take it apart to make it unconvincing. There is actually no chemical, no matter, no mass kicking around, which doesn't have a postulate behind it, a thought. You take the thought out and it isn't. Now, the only reason you haven't done it is because you don't want to. Actually, now you think offhand that that's not true. You think you'd just as soon pull the pillars down. But I'll tell you that there are some little techniques that tell you why you won't. And run well enough on a preclear would probably get him up to a point where he would do it. But there is a refusal to unmock the universe. Technique runs like this. Technique is a fascinating thing. It all comes from last February when I threw in the sponge and I said, well, you can't do it. There is no way that the body can still be there and be proofed against fission. And the reason why this is the case is a very simple reason. It's because fission is the genus of matter. We get fission at the creative end of the spectrum, not at the other end. And if you were to proof a body against fission, the first and foremost thing that would happen would be the disappearance of the body. Which is interesting, But you just go ask J. Edgar Spoofer. You just go ask him, and he wouldn't like it. He'd have all these ghosts running around, you know, doing bad things. All these ghosts running around in circles. No way to fingerprint them. No way to Bertillonize them. No way to identify. And if you couldn't identify, then you couldn't identify. And that would be a horrible thing. I don't know why. But everybody seems to think that it would be a horrible thing. Now, this is the basic agreement. There must be identity. One must be able to name things. One must be able to have syllables that fit with the masses. You have something, and you have to have a name for it. Of course, that's good enough for the medical profession. Scientology, we not only want a name for it, we also want a use for it. Silly of us, but we do. We say, it is not enough to know the 8,672 parts of the mind, all of them mass. See? We want to know what they do. And the moment we ask that question, the subject of psychology goes poof, because those things aren't doing anything except maybe sticking on to you. We find out very clearly then that things are as solid as people are convinced. People are as crazy as they are convinced. The world is a world as long as conviction says so. Now I want to make a personal, private plea to you. Why are you so convinced? What are you holding on to all these convictions for? Yet you are. This is a remarkable thing. Let me tell you the technique that leads to this. You might like to experiment with this technique. It's not particularly therapeutic, but boy, is it fun. And that runs like this. The technique is a simple one. It'll turn on anybody's mock-ups. Too bright. Much, much too bright. Anybody's mock-ups will turn on with this technique. Anybody's. Black fives. Ink 12s, obsidian 15s. You can turn on their mock-ups. Ruins them. Scares them to death. They want to cut and run. But what do you do if they do? You just sit on their chest and run it some more. That's easy. Well, you say to the preclear, given that he is in session, that there's an auditor present, a preclear present, a place to audit, and you ask him to decide to make a mock-up the size of that wall, and then tell him to recollect that it would ruin the game and not do so. Total commands. That's it. All right, you say, now, all right, now, you decide to make a mock-up the size of the wall. You didn't tell him to make the mock-up, you see. You said, decide to make a mock-up the size of that wall. All right. Now, realize that would ruin the game and not do it. And he does that. See? And that's the total cycle. You just go over this and over this and over this and over this. And all of a sudden, it's up there in 3D with total mass, with the 54 perceptions and 9 I never heard of. And it's more real than real. and the Cinerama promoters would turn Viridian. He can do it. Now, if you don't do it very long, he gets this mock-up, you come back an hour later, and you say, all right, make a mock-up. And he says, what mock-up? You say, make a mock-up the size of the wall, just like I just taught you to. And he says, can't. Why? And he looks at you very soberly without being at all critical of you. And he says, well, it'd ruin the game. And you say, how would it ruin the game? Well, if I keep up that very much longer, anybody will be able to see it. And if that is the case, then of what use is the already prefabricated scenery of Earth? In other words, it's no game. That's a great oddity, isn't it? You got a pre-clear who has problems. Boy, has he got problems. He looks like three plowshares have been run between his eyebrows. He's all bent over. The burden of life is too great for him. And what do you know? You run problems of comparable magnitude, problems of comparable magnitude, and you run it right and you run it well. And you eventually flip him out to a point where he has exactly no problems. Where he realizes that he is just making up problems to keep himself busy. And you say, ha, there you are. Nothing to it. Nothing to it. There you are. End of session. Next day you see him, he's got five furrows between. You say, what's the matter? Didn't that session work? He says, what session? In other words, you do your job too thoroughly and you're in trouble. As long as a person still believes it is vitally necessary for him to have a game. So that is the stumbling block in all ability recovery. We've got some fellow who is a perfect idiot. What's he an idiot for? Well, if he was less of an idiot, he'd have less game. But he hasn't got any game at all. He's such an idiot. He doesn't see anything wrong with this. It's one of these circular problems. You keep meeting yourself coming back. Now, the one thing a Thetan doesn't like to do is confront a solid. Why? He isn't. What is a Thetan, anyhow? Axiom one, Scientology. Static. Not the kind that the electronic boys fight. Something without mass, without motion, without location, without wavelength. Capable, axiom two, of producing spaces, particles, objects, masses. That horrible simplicity is evidently too much for anybody to take. It is an intolerable simplicity. So somebody goes and invents a religion. He says, this thing goes to heaven. He says, it goes to hell. Well, we know it goes to hell. He says, this thing, he says, gets karma. It's a sort of an inedible thing, karma. In old Dianetics, we used to eat it, though. What is karma? The concatenations of moments of difficulty when somebody did something. It's erasable, karma is. The one thing you evidently can't do with karma is live it out. So we get karma. We get all sorts of oddities. Why? Because nobody can tolerate this horrible simplicity. He says, life is more complicated than this. Now, when I said that, I was not quoting each and every mental profession for the last 5,000 years. I was not quoting them. I was quoting every mental profession for the last 100 billion. Simply that. It's too simple. It's a simplicity. And a person doesn't want that much simplicity. He wants a little complexity. But he doesn't want too much complexity. I wish he'd make up his mind. Well, now, if we look over these various ramifications of life, we find out then that a certain amount of complexity is desirable. But each and every individual has evidently made up his mind that he is in agreement with every other individual, which he is not, and that every other individual has exactly this much complexity, which he hasn't. Everybody is running on a different amount of complexity. This we call randomity, called by some rondamity. As a matter of fact, the most hideous thing happens if you simply ask somebody to mock up a cube. You say, mock up a cube. Person probably can't mock up, it doesn't matter. You say, mock up a cube. Good, unmock it. Fine, mock up a cube. Good, unmock it. Mock up a cube. Unmock it. He was getting away with this just fine for the first 50, first 25, first one half a command. For some distance, he might have gotten away with it, but all of a sudden he's in trouble. Why? All of a sudden, stuff starts coming in on the cube. He puts the cube there, and stuff starts going zoom, 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 boom. But all you were asking him to do is create a mental image picture of a simple geometric figure. That's all you ask him to do. Now, the funny part of it is, if you ask him to do this, varying from preclear to preclear, 500 times, at last he can put up a cube there, which no longer has stuff going zzzz. Now we catch this fellow 2 months later and we ask him, what is the optimum art form? He says, a cube. Why? Because he was audited. Because a cube is the one thing which will stand pristine and pure as a simplicity. You see that? Just the one thing that'll stand there is a cube. Art forms which are complex aren't art forms. You get, various periods of architecture. You get the Renaissance, the Teddy Roosevelt period, early Eleanor. These periods of art that are extremely complex aren't art. They're arguments. And you finally get this far along the track, you just say the word art, and it immediately closes terminals with argument, and there you have it. All art is, you might say, as an appreciated fact, all art is an appreciated fact, one might say, which can maintain some degree of simplicity uninterfered with. That's It's only what's pleasing to a thetan. If a thetan is pleased by it, it's art, providing it's stable. He cannot tolerate something that is unstable, so he says that's not art. It's science. So he doesn't have any real idea at all of a complexity associated with this word art. It is simply something that he can look at and say, how nice. That's art. Latter-day writing. We always had a school of writing at time immemorial. We've had schools of writing which weren't. They were neither schools nor writing. And these schools would say, well, the way to write is to dramatize all the types of writing which were never admired. We get painting schools, which call themselves art schools, and all they do is dramatize all the types of painting that were never admired. We get somebody in a circus who makes a big act out of falling off tight wires. It's comedy, but it's not art. Why? It was never admired. So we get people insisting on art. Way back about 122, this fellow, 18, we don't use the word reincarnation in Scientology because it's non-factual. The fact of reincarnation is just a concatenation of identities. And you don't have to get as complicated as reincarnation. That's awfully complicated. It does happen to be horribly true, you know, that people haven't just lived once. But the lives they've lived usually are best forgotten about. They go around protesting to each other that they only live one life. Obviously, this was never admired because it persists. People are insisting upon it. Well, we take this fellow back in the year 1002, in the year of the greater decline of Roman art, and he paints a picture. Actually, he was drunk. He came in from a party. He was drunk, and there were some brushes lying there. And there was a badly prepared canvas that had already had a bucket of red paint spilled on one corner of it. And he comes in, and he says, I think I'll paint a great picture. It's like some of those poems that you wake up in the middle of the night that are so beautiful and write down. And the next morning the paper says, Ubba gubba gubba, gubba gubba ubba, ubba. He said, well, that was a beautiful poem. Well, anyway, he paints this thing, see? Dips in a big brush and goes... Couple slaves got hold of him and put him in bed. Next morning... he is aware of having painted a beautiful picture. He said, last night when I came home, I was truly inspired. Roman art is about to revive. I have painted this picture which outpictures all pictures. I have executed a gorgeousity. Unfortunately, he doesn't go in and look at it. A couple friends drop around for breakfast, and he says, gentlemen, once again, Rome will exceed Greece. I have painted the greatest masterpiece ever painted. Tells them all about it, see? These two friends, unfortunately, are... a couple of the worst gossip mongers and snide persons in the particular set he runs with, Coliseum crowd. When they finish breakfast, he takes them in to show them this masterpiece. He doesn't even glance at it. He says, "See?" And they look at it and they said, He looks at it. He doesn't think it's any good either. He says, but he doesn't dare do a thing about it. He's bragged about it. He said, "That's beautiful art." And he spends all of his talents, neglects all of his girlfriends, becomes a moral character and everything, just so that he can run a school which promotes this type of picture to convince everybody it's art. In other words, he's trying to be right. That's all he's trying to be. He's trying to be right in the face of everything. And so the less that picture is admired, the less that school is admired, why, the more he insists on its validity and its greatness. Well, that isn't art. That's aberration. Now, where we see this happening in the broad field of life, we see people here, there, everywhere, who have, at one time or another in their lives, gone a bit wacky. One would say a bit off the deep end. They have skidded on the curve, in other technical terms. These people have put up a mock-up. And they have said, "I detest fried cabbage. It is inedible. It is this, it is that," and so forth. Well, they've made a resistance. And everybody says to them, "Now look, you can't detest fried cabbage. Here in Russia, it's all we have to eat." You pick him up in America generations later, he has an allergy to some food. We don't know what food it is. Finally turns out to be cabbage. He's insisting against all comers that he can't eat cabbage. Whose idea was it in the first place? His. But if he suddenly eats cabbage, he knows he'll be wrong. To whom, though, and about what? Not about cabbage, it's just he never wanted his mother to be right in that life. He wouldn't take kindly to his brother being so right in that life, don't you see? So, here he is with an allergy to cabbage. Well, that's an aberration, isn't it? But boy, can he make a full art out of it. Man, can he make that into an artistic aberration. He starts a complete society for the abolition of cabbage. He beats the drum. He traces all man's ills, the breakdown of political skill, juvenile delinquency, whatever that is, to cabbage. Now, what makes this crazy and makes the Republican Party sane? What's the difference? It's just nobody could agree on the subject of cabbage, but everybody could agree on the subject of money scarcity. In other words, the tenets are agreed with or not agreed with, as the case may be, and that determines sanity or aberration. I'm sorry, that happens to be the truth. There isn't any sanity. There is no sanity of any kind. And that for which ye seek ain't. There is broad agreement, however. On a certain procedure. And that could be said to be a normal or an existing state of being. But it can't be said to be sane. So if there's no such thing as insanity, where the hell does anybody get off saying anybody's crazy? Isn't that an awful curve? How can there possibly be a profession which treats something that isn't insanity? If we have a tremendous amount of disagreement from person to person on what should be, we would then have an insane world, because there'd be no ARC to amount to anything. And everybody would look crazy. To whom? To each other. Therefore, we could have a profession that treated agreement, but I don't think we could have one that treated insanity. Because insanity isn't something you would treat. In the first place, it is not a subject which can be addressed. It is not even really a subject that can be described. Because all it says is, this guy here isn't in agreement with these guys here. So if you were the only, quote, sane man, unquote, to land on the planet of Arcturus, you'd be locked up in the spin bin. You see that? Now, we can't then say this is insane and that is insane and something else is insane and that we should treat this insanity and we should remedy that insanity and so on. We just lost the moment we do that. As soon as we say this person has schizophrenia, the medulla oblongata, we're just talking. And it might be pleasant to roll such words around on the tongue, but it does not mean a thing. This individual is not in communication with his fellows. That we can say. All that psychiatry has managed to teach the insane is to keep their mouths shut. But actually, that was what was wrong with the insane in the first place. They were keeping their mouths shut. So you could teach the insane they were insane, if they were insane, if you had some labels which were insane. But you certainly could not, from that point on, remedy the condition. It isn't a remediable condition. There is no condition to be remedied. This is a very, very interesting study. You go to the total of complication on something that is out of agreement with the rest of the world, and you have something that could be characterized as insane. But now to describe this thing as insanity is itself insanity. Say, we have discovered an insanity that has to do with the big toe. Yeah, we call it bigtosis. Magnetosis. People get the idea of the big toe and they go insane. Now, that is a reverse look, don't you see? That is exactly looking at it the wrong way, too. Somebody goes out of agreement and picks up something like a fixation on his big toe, and you could then say, this person is out of agreement with the rest of the world. You could say, well, he's crazy. Do you see how this could function, how this could work? That people do not get a hold of a certain idea and then go crazy. Got that? Ideas aren't even dangerous. But lack of them are. Lack of new ideas, lack of new thought characterize the degeneration and decay not only of the individual but of the society. When they start to run out of ideas, watch out, because they'll fixate on certain ideas, and then you have this interesting state of beingness called out of agreement. But you could get a large mass of individuals totally agreed upon one idea with no other idea amongst them, and you'd get a frozen, fixated condition on the part of a group. 90% of what's wrong with communism is not that communism is inoperable, but it's a fixed idea. It has certain fixed ideas that it runs on, and these worked beautifully, probably in two or three districts in Russia, and haven't worked since. And the second they tried to put them out beyond their borders, they didn't find any agreement to amount to anything, and the people out beyond the borders said, ah, we know what communism is, and picked up their favorite fixation and operated that way. And then one day a commissar came along and says, you know, you boys aren't practicing communism, off with their heads. They do that in Red China all the time. The Chinese are great ones at this. Stand in front of you and say, you know, you say, he agrees and agrees and agrees, only he isn't there to do any agreeing. And you've told him all about how you operate a camera. You taught him. Now he knows exactly how to operate a camera. You told him. Now, a month or so later, you see him out operating this camera. He's holding it upside down, and he's loading it this way and that. He's getting pictures. How, we can't possibly figure out. Now, you try to change that. No, you don't. Whole races, whole armies have gone to dust trying to alter one idea in the mind of one celestial. They get fixed. That's the thing they do best. They endure. Well, there must be something called a subject of insanity. Otherwise, nobody would worry about it. There must be something to treat, otherwise there wouldn't be vast appropriations and huge numbers of people. It's a multi-billion dollar business in this planet at this time. Must be something there. There must be something you could do about it. There should be. Look, if people are spending this much money on something, there must be something there. And so we just keep going and spending more money and getting more expert on what? That which is least admired most often persists. So I guess the idea that everybody's nuts has never been popular. Never has been popular, therefore it's persisting like mad, like the Roman painting. All right. Now, I'm not just trying to make a few cracks about something or other, but I actually have something interesting to announce to you. And that is, although specific insanities cannot and do not exist, there is a condition which leads toward the condition which should be described as insanity, which is remediable. Now, you understand that you could increase insanity in two different ways. One, by increasing the classifications, and two, being more critical of everybody. And you would have increased, statistically, insanity. People are probably saner today than they ever were. But if this is the case, if this is the case, then insanity does have a basis if everybody is so worried about it. It is not a curable entity, but there is a condition which leads people into this critical state of beingness, which then and there declares widespread and broad insanity. You follow me? Everybody, in other words, could get so critical that they would declare everybody else crazy. It is doubtful if insanity ever happens to the individual. It's one of the old saws about insanity that if you think you're sane and everybody else is crazy, watch out. But if you have some doubt about yourself, you're okay. That is merely a statement that has to do with criticalness. Well, it's a big, broad world. There are an awful lot of people in it. But people who drive along this road toward this false postulate, this conviction of the existence of insanity, don't know it. They don't know there's a world full of people out there. They don't know their next-door neighbor exists. When they bump into a human being on the street, they have no idea into what they have bumped. Now that is not then a condition of insanity. It's a condition of extreme scarcity. The conviction of scarcity is a separate item from or than the actual scarcity. A person can be convinced milk is scarce while swimming in a tank of it. People then do get the idea of scarcity amidst plenty, and sometimes get the idea of plenty amidst scarcity. In other words, the idea of abundance or lack of it is subject to conviction that has very little to do with abundance or lack of it. Now, Scientology 8-8008 and SOP-8 of years ago contains this material. I call it to your attention because it has been in existence now for about 4 years. But I did not realize until very recently that we had actually isolated something which would wipe out all of this nonsense about insanity. And we had had it for 4 years. The remedy of scarcity, the establishing the idea of abundance, remedies this whole idea of insanity. Let me show you how this works. You interested in this? All right, let me show you how this works. Here's a fella, has a body. Satan, spirit, he has a body. And everything around him operates to tell him that it's the only body he'll ever have or get. He thinks he better take it awful easy. He might get too extravagant with that scarce item. It's only one body. He'd better not throw it in the wrong garbage dump. He'd better be careful what brick wall he runs into. He'd better wear his winter underwear and button up his overcoat, because it's a scarce item. Families are very good at this. They are really basically aware that a thetan is coming along and taking one of the genetic line and is running it. And the family has a vested interest in this, so they keep saying, "Now, Johnny, don't go over and burn yourself on the stove. Not done." You wonder that they'd have to tell him this. He'll only burn himself once. And if he doesn't remember it from a past life, he's a dope. Bodies are scarce. All right. Here are these bodies then, 2 billion of them on a planet, each one of them totally scarce. They're vast organizations which work to slow the genetic line down. I won't mention any names because these organizations are well contributed to. And besides, you shouldn't say the name Roman Catholic Church on Sunday, because Sunday's a holy day. Now listen. They say no sex, no sex, no sex, no sex. My, how scarce bodies are. Son, you're going to hell. All right, wait a minute. Does that sound a little bit confused to you? Sounds like somebody can't have a body. Sounds like bodies have gotten awfully scarce already. So scarce, you better not make any. Now, of course, they really don't say don't make any bodies. They merely put enough restrictions on it so that it becomes impossible. Now, that's not a bitter comment on the Roman Catholic Church. A lot of things the Pope has said I totally approve of. Totally approve of. He was just cussing the living daylights out of medicine, psychology, and psychiatry the other day, and I approved of it wholly. And I said, the next time I have any cracks to make about the Roman Catholic Church, I'll omit the Pope. So I have, see? All right, so we say, son, if you're going to marry, it takes a job, income, you must get over your draft call, you must do this, you must do that, you must reaware of the fact that vast responsibilities descend upon you if you get married. Most married couples go around hoping they're measuring up to all these responsibilities. They're not any of them quite sure what they are, and as a result, miss 90% of them. Because their first responsibility is to live and have fun. It says so right in the Declaration of Independence. The only valid document written in America. All right. So, these 2 billion scarce bodies, each one of them has to be made to live to 108 years of age. Because we mustn't manufacture any more, because they're already too scarce. In other words, we aren't even vaguely in a sensible subject when we're on the sensible subject of a body. Body is a very sensible subject. Very, very sensible. But the only thing sensible about it, however, is that they can be sensed. Now, here we have this idea that bodies are scarce. Somebody gets this idea and he says, you know, this is the only body I've got. You know, and if I were to run into a car that had another body in it, that's the only body that other person will ever have. Boom! Oh, I wonder why I did that. I mustn't do that. They go around, spin, 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 about protect the body, protect it, hide it, don't have it, scarce. Get the idea? What's the first thing that people conclude? They better not work it too hard. They'll wear it out. And the first symptom of departure from the common agreement of life and livingness is just that. I mustn't work too hard. You go out here just a little bit further and you get over into criminality. The one thing a criminal can't do is work. He cannot work at all. He can't have anything unless he steals it, purloins it, or spoils it. Get how far off his havingness is gone by that time. But he's over here into a band where he can't have a body at all. And now we go just a little bit further on this same spectrum, and we get over here and we discover sanitarium. All you have to say about a crazy person is that he is an unused body. That's right. That's right. He's just unused. You go around and you see a sick person. You say, well, I guess he didn't use that body very well. But if you meant he used it badly and got it in trouble, you're wrong. He didn't get it in enough trouble. Now, we know that by observation. No track star ever got any place without trotting around a track a few times. In other words, he had to use up a body to make it capable. But it didn't use up. You know that all athletes eventually suffer from an athletic heart. A fellow came into the hospital up at Oakland. He had an athletic heart. A couple of smart young doctors up there. And we had a powwow about this. And I said, well, why don't you redevelop him? Guy wasn't supposed to be talking, see. So they got the idea themselves next day. And they made him go back in training. He was 36 years of age, and he had an enlarged heart. So next day, he went into training. And every day, he walked a little bit further, and he finally built his whole physique up to a point where it would match that big heart. You know? And then they made him knock off training, keeping him in the hospital. They made him knock off training a little bit each day until his heart came back down to normal. Fella died, but it was a spectacular cure. In other words, it takes some use. It takes use. There are all kinds of aberrations develop along this line, however, to prevent a free use of the body. You're told that you mustn't do this, you mustn't do that, you have to do this, and so on. And if you get out and walk around the block when it's raining, you catch a chill and come down with your death of aberration or something. You're told all sorts of things about care of the body, care of the body, care of the body, care of the body. By the way, we really get around, you know, in Scientology. I mean, you're seeing more and more and more of it. The other day, in a medical journal, it said the modern fixation on care of the body. Somebody's been peeking. Anyway, we've been talking about this for years. But care of the body. Save it. Save it. Don't expend it. Be careful of it. It's scarce. Are all the same remark. Get the idea? As soon as you classify those remarks in the same band, you have the answer to insanity. That appearance on the part of a human being which causes other human beings to say he's insane. Insanity itself doesn't exist. There is no concatenation of ideas or combinations of fixations which eventually evolve into insanity. But there is a condition where the fellow has a body that he's not using. And when he doesn't use that body, when he doesn't use that mind, it collapses on him and it traps him utterly because it's more precious and more valuable than he is. And out of this, by the way, all the manifestations of insanity, if you really go and watch them, are explained. A dying person and an insane person have very much the same bank behavior. The engrams are going this way and coming that way, and things are blowing up over here, and there's a couple of demons fighting over in that corner. The whole thing is going on without any supervision whatsoever. Reminds you of a schoolroom with a schoolmistress gone. Reminds you of a factory without a foreman. Everything is going in all directions except the right direction. In other words, somebody has abdicated the control of this item. When a body becomes just so scarce, an individual is no longer willing to expend it. When he's no longer willing to expend it, he begins to be afraid that he will miscontrol it. If he miscontrols it, he then is afraid that he had better not control it, and then he knows he can't. And it works the same way with the mental equipment of the body. If one is afraid of that, or if that becomes terribly valuable, or the mind, I don't know what a mind is, honest to Pete, because every time I get hold of one, I erase it. Anyhow, I don't know what a mind is, but it must be terribly interesting for everybody to be so interested in this thing called a mind. I know what a thetan is, what postulates are, and what energy forms are. But I cannot for the life of me figure out how any neuron synapses, or how that would have anything to do with thinking. And I don't think it does have. I don't think any of this mental equipment, as such, has very much to do with thinking. I think the fellow keys in a mental image picture over here, and then quickly puts the idea that he should have into it, gets it back and says, oh, that's what it is. Well, now you stop controlling the action of pictures. You stop controlling the action of muscles. While they themselves still alive, you get a chaos, an uncontrolled chaos. And if this is what we mean by insanity, all right. But that person has not controlled it simply because he has passed gradually out of the entire sphere of agreement. And the basic agreement of life is live. When you stop living, you start dying. And there's no real difference between the mental state of a dying person and the mental state of an insane person. I've had abundant conversations with both, and I know what I'm talking about. There's no real difference. In other words, the dying person who is abandoning his body, inch by inch, step by step, can't control it, it's out of control, it's gone. And the person who is spinning in some spin bin present alike identical phenomena. Not because insanity is death, but because insanity is can't use and death is won't be able to. In other words, an abandonment of the use of the body, an abandonment of the experience of living, makes one fall out of ARC with all things. And when a body is supposed to be controlled, but isn't controlled, but is part of 2 billion bodies, but is apparently only one body, we have enough disagreements and upsets so that we have a complete maladjustment. What's the answer to insanity? What cures insanity? It's been staring us in the face for 4 years. Don't feel bad you didn't notice it, because I didn't either. It's all there is to insanity. It's all there is to insanity. A remedy of abundance of bodies. Well, if that's all there is to insanity, and if insanity consists of an abandonment of control of bodies, then what is the answer to the control of bodies? Ha! remedy the abundance of bodies. Oh, if an individual can't work or isn't ambitious, which is part of this same spectrum I've just described to you, you see the spectrum of in there pitching, living, and then can't work too hard, then isn't controlling it, follows this curve right down to an inability to live, which is insanity, we then have a remedy of havingness on terms of bodies coming right back up the curve again and putting the fellow all the way in there pitching. And the answer to it is havingness. The answer to it is abundance of bodies. Not making abundance of bodies. There are plenty of bodies. Look! Lots of bodies. But there are lots of people with an idea that there aren't lots of bodies. Now, how did they get that way? There are two ways that you could do this. One would be to create an actual scarcity of bodies. For instance, the whole Western aberrations are the subject of women of a century ago. Were totally based on the idea that there weren't any women out west. And the first women that got there were treated so abominably courteously that they almost flipped their lids. It's quite interesting. I know I met a girl one time who had been in an area of scarcity, and everybody was treating her as something so delicate and so fragile and so valuable, she couldn't get any place. I sympathized with it. Well, that's another story. What is this basic thing called scarcity? What's the anatomy of scarcity? As a thing becomes scarce, it becomes valuable. To become valuable, an individual or a thing tends to make itself scarce. You get those two things? Now, as an individual is unimportant, he tends to pretend scarce. In other words, how do you go about making yourself scarce? Get the idea? Right? If you became dependent, you would no longer be valuable. Do you see? And he forces them off on other people, but they don't admire this idea at all. And they stick him with it, that he's scarce. And he eventually gets the idea that he is scarce. And if he gets this idea he's scarce, he's on his way. Because the next thing he'll do is not work too hard, not control the body too well, and the next thing you know, he can't. That's all there is to insanity. It as a subject or a thing doesn't exist unless it is a condition which occurs with a falling out from agreement with life itself, which says live. And therefore, as one falls down the ARC scale, one goes mad. But what is the exact passage? The exact passage is just that one thing. Scarce. It doesn't have to have any other idea connected with it. Now, what I'm telling you now is an isolated idea. where the idea of scarcity was once not isolated at all. In other words, there might have been a lot of other things which caused this condition. I can tell you today that there aren't a lot of other things which cause this condition. There's just one thing that causes this condition. And that's a very adventurous, strange statement for anybody to make. Particularly me. I tell you that scarcity of bodies brings about the condition we know as insanity. Inability to work, unwillingness or unableness in control of bodies are way stops on no bodies. In other words, here's the fellow, lots of bodies. He doesn't have to consider himself terribly important. Other people around are perfectly willing to say, "How are you, Joe?" They treat him with some importance. Do you see this? He gets along all right. But now he gets an environment where everybody says, "Joe, you're the least important dud around here. What are you doing here? Who are you?" Mama says, "I didn't want a kid anyway." Daddy says, "I've got to work twice as hard now that you've come." Teacher says, "I've got too many kids in this class." What's the fella do? He says, "You know, I've got to make myself more important." He's got to swell up. He's got to make himself more important because he's under a continuous bombardment of how unimportant he is. So what's he do? He says, "There's only one me." He invents the fiction of living but once. He invents the fiction of the terrible sadness of the death of a child. You get the idea? He makes it pathetic. He makes it a catastrophic thing if he would suddenly disappear off the face of earth. And all of a sudden one day he's tired and he can't figure out why he's tired. Well, he's tired because he's gotten scarce. And then one day he says, "You know, I would love to take hurdles the way I used to," but he can't take hurdles that way anymore. Why? He's gotten to a point where he can't control himself that well anymore. And then one day he says, "You know, I'm awfully worried about my mind." Why? He's scarce. Now, how do you pull him out of this? Had the technique for years. You have him waste bodies until he gets how valuable they are. Have him remedy his havingness with them. And finally pull them up out of inverted value, which is no value at all. I mean, he's just collapsed on the subject. Up to, they're terribly valuable. Up to their bodies. You see how he could do that? Well, Scientology processing can do that today. And that's one more problem we've got licked. Thank you.